All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to a Friday episode of Dropping the Gloves here. It's going to be a good one, Tim. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it's a very full agenda. There's so much to talk about. There's so many just hockey stories, and it's not just the game. There's a lot of stuff like between the lines, a lot of really just fascinating decisions made by coaches and the goals that were scored, and just it's great. Let's get into it.
Well, first, this episode is brought to you by Bet365, proud partner Dropping the Gloves. Open an account with Bet365 today and bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA. Bet365. Code HOCKEYCA. Okay, let's jump into it here.
A little robotic there, John.
What's that?
Little robotic there.
You got to make sure you get it in there, everything pronounced correctly, or else they get upset. All right, last show we predicted the Carolina Hurricanes would win game 6, force a game 7, and the Colorado Avalanche would be eliminated. Well, we should have did a George Costanza and reversed everything, because the opposite happened. Colorado extended their series to force a game 6 versus the Dallas Stars, and Carolina last night lost game 6 to be eliminated in the second round to the New York Rangers in very dramatic fashion. Very Toronto Maple Leaf-esque, I should say. Coming into this game, they had all the momentum. They went down 3-0, as we all saw. Close games, overtime, one-goal games. Any team could have wanted a bounce here, a bounce there. Very good three games, but Carolina came out on the short end of the stick on those three. They won the last two, building momentum, going home for game 6, hoping to extend it to game 7, jump out to a 3-1 lead. Fantastic. Everybody playing good. Third period starts. Jordan Martinook hits a post. Jake Guentzel hits a post. And then the game was over. But I want to go back to even the Rangers' first goal, Tim. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. Talk about self-inflicting wounds. Talk about having regrets in the offseason. This will sting the Carolina Hurricanes, because this game they should have won. Two of the goals that the Rangers scored were just given to them on a platter. And the first one was Dmitry Orlov, coming off a nice save by Anderson, a little bit of a scrum in front of the net. He gets the puck on his stick, clear as day, no one around him. He sees one of his forwards breaking the zone. The forward isn't looking at him. I don't know if it was Sebastian Aho. I'm not sure who it was. He passes it to that forward who's not expecting the puck. Panarin picks it off. Well, doesn't even pick it off. It just goes right to him. Shoots it on the net. Vincent Trocheck with a nice tip. 1-1 hockey game. What a huge mistake by Dmitry Orlov. He played for the Bruins. What are your thoughts on that?
He's a very good defenseman, and he's very reliable, but he is prone to a mistake like that once or twice a series. We saw it last year. We saw it in the first round, and we saw it again tonight or last night. So, it's tough to swallow if you're him. And, you know, you can – games like this, series like this, there's a million things you can point at and say, man, if this is – but like you said a few minutes ago, if those post shots, one of those goes in the third period, this game's over. So this is one of those things you can overanalyze. Bad luck. I don't fault him too much for losing the series or anything like that, but he's going to have nightmares about that one for sure.
Well, you never want to have what ifs. And this is what's going to happen with the Hurricanes this offseason, because they have a team that could win the Stanley Cup. The Rangers also have a team that could win the Cup. they were the favorites going into this playoffs. You picked them. I picked them. All the other pundits picked them. A lot of people were really, really in with the Carolina Hurricanes. You add Orlov. You add Gensel. You add Kuznetsov. You do everything you need to do at the deadline in the offseason. You're having a great season. And then it's just down the drains in the second round. And not because of this one game, not because of these few plays, but it did seem like that put a punctuation on the season. Orlov just turns it over, back of your net. Third period, you have a chance to go up 4-1. You have another chance to go up 4-1. Post. Nice save by Shesterkin. You're carrying the play. And then with 13 minutes left in the third, the Rangers just get a very innocent-looking rush. Gets pinched off on the boards. Nice play by the Carolina defenders. Zibanejad picks it up. He's below the goal line. Throws it on the net. Freddie Anderson, for whatever reason, is already going across the crease. Like, his body is across the crease. He holds the post with his skate, but his weight and momentum are pushing across. Maybe he thinks the pass is going to get across to Kreider, who isn't even there at that time. The puck just sits there on his skate on the post. Nobody touches it. Anderson can't cover it up because his momentum's going the other way. And Kreider just shoves it in. Two goals given to the New York Rangers. They didn't work for it. They didn't do anything good to get it. It was just given to them. And Rod Brindamore said after the game in his post-game press conference, as soon as they scored that second goal, it was over. The momentum shifted. You could see the Rangers get a lot of energy off of that. And then it was just we were fighting an uphill battle. And we were losing. We weren't first to the puck. So you could tell the Rangers had an extra pep in their step. And it was just downhill from there. And Chris Kreider, he does what Chris Kreider does. He sits his ass in front of the net and he just waits. That's all he does. He's very good at it. I played with him with New York. You could tell he was good coming in from Boston College or Boston University, one of the two. And he's gotten better. And he did exactly what he does. All three of his goals, he got a natural hat trick, goal 2, 3, and 4, came within a foot and a half from the net. The first one was an inch from the net. The second one was a nice tip. The third one was maybe he was in the blue when he scored it. Right. That's all he does, Tim. He is the leading goal scorer in the playoffs since 2016. I hazard a guess of his 50, or I think he has 66, 67 goals. I bet you 60 of them are within a foot of the net. At least. That's all he does. He's incredible at it. He has a nose for the net. He can find a puck through a maze. He's got great hands. He can tip it. And he's a moose. You can't push him out of the way. You have no idea how big his legs and ass are. Sorry for cussing the A word, buddy. He's just so hard to move out of the way. And I said it last episode, this guy is the most unknown superstar in the NHL, maybe of all time. Like, he's the leading goal scorer, Tim, in the playoffs since 2016. He just got a natural hat trick. He's playing in one of the biggest markets in hockey. You think he would be all over billboards, getting individual awards. He had 50-some goals a couple years ago. He's nothing. Nothing. He's got more goals than Ovechkin, Stamkos, Matthews, everybody. No one talks about him. But he scores a natural hat trick, puts the Rangers on their back. What did you take from this game at the end of the day? Because you're a Carolina guy. You're in Carolina.
Yeah, this is a tough one. And I was thinking about this last night and a little bit this morning. So Carolina, obviously disappointing. And I said it last show, do we start comparing them to Toronto? It's not exactly the same, but I think there's criticism there where something's not right with this group to not advance further than they have. They should be playing at least one cup final in the last 5 years, and they haven't gotten there at all. And then I started thinking, what if this group was a Canadian team? What if this was a Canadian team? Montreal, Calgary, whatever, Edmonton, and this was their past 5, 6, 7 seasons, and they lose this way in the second round in a natural hat trick after having a 3-1 lead in the third. Like, if this was Canadian team, it'd be pitchforks. They'd be like Toronto-esque. So I feel like there's going to be a lot of changes. And when you look at their cap friendly, their cap situation, they have a ton of expiring contracts. They have a ton of decisions to make. Brindamore is still not signed to an extension. So there's a lot of questions that'll be asked about the direction this team goes, how dire they think the situation is. Because, you know, some of it's just you run into a hot team, a good goalie. In the Brindamore era, the last 6 seasons, they've been eliminated by a guy playing like the best goalie in the league. It was Tuukka Rask, Vasilevskiy, Shesterkin, Bobrovsky, Shesterkin. You never had the best goalie in any of those series. So I feel like a couple of tweaks, probably you're back in it. But at the same time, the body of work, six seasons, this is now Toronto-esque. Like, you need to make some changes.
So with your reasoning, they have to go out and get the best goalie in order to succeed.
We'll get into that a little bit in the offseason, but I feel like Ullmark is a good destination there. I feel like that would be a good trade that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know why this team can't win. I've said it for a long time now. The reason I think they can't win is they don't have that superstar. They come up in the big moments. And the Rangers, we saw last game, their best players were their best players. And usually when that happens, your team is successful. We'll touch on the Edmonton Oilers in a little bit. Their best players are not their best players. But staying with Carolina, who were their best players? This series, was it Sebastian Aho consistently? Maybe. Was it Seth Jarvis? I think so. Martin Nikas, very dangerous.
Gensel,
was it Svechnikov looked pretty good. Gensel, I don't think, played that great throughout the series. I don't think he played like a best player would. So maybe they need to tinker with their top two lines. Maybe you need to get some legit superstars in there. That's hard to do. You can't just go and find somebody off the street and say, okay, yep, you're my best player. It is what it is. But I think you're absolutely right. You nailed it on the head. If this team is north of the border, we're calling for heads. We want some changes, and we want them now. This is too much for a team with this much potential. But let's get to the players who might be leaving. It's always fun when the season ends and someone's dad just sends out a tweet right away. Like this is sent at 10:37 p.m. The game ended at like 9:50. Like, this guy had it ready. Brian Pesce, Brent Pesce's father. He says, thank you, Caniacs, for always being good to myself and the Pesce family. We will certainly miss all of you. Go Canes. What are you doing, dummy? Like, what are we doing here? Isn't that fun when your family members just decide that your career in a city's over and we're moving on? He has that power. Is he his son's agent? I don't know. I doubt it. But just like, get off social media. What are we doing here? Like,
it's crazy.
It's working out.
It was only up for a couple of minutes, and then it was deleted. Obviously, Brett saw it. Someone saw it, said, hey, get this off. So Pesci's one of, like, 10 or 12, you know, NHL, like, core players whose contract expired. Just in the back end alone, it's Brady Shea, Brett Pesce, D'Angelo, Chatfield, Dylan Coughlin up front. Teravainen, Nosen, Martinuk, Gensel, Necha, Seth Jarvis, Jack Drury. Like, this is half their team.
Yeah,
and obviously not all of them are walking, but you got to figure out which ones you bring back, which ones you are hitting the market. And it looks like Pesce expects to hit the market. And he'll probably command some dollars there.
Yeah, a lot of those guys are going to command some dollars. Seth Jarvis last year made $1.394. He's going to want at least to triple that, if not quadruple that. He had 33 goals this year. He had a breakout season in the playoffs. He was their best player in the playoffs. Who's lights out. So he's going to want a contract. If it's a long-term contract, that bad boy better start with 7 or 8. You know what I'm saying? Friend of the show, he's going to get paid. Same thing with Martin. I always butcher his last name. Nachos. He's going to want some money. Jack Drury had a very good season. Gensel, what do you do with him? You didn't spend much to get him, but you'd like to keep him. So there's a lot of questions to be asked here. But again, do you want to just keep rolling back the same team? Who knows? But the young guys did play well. The vets, maybe not. Rod Brind'Amour, you'd want him back, you would expect. He's a good coach. He seems to get the most out of his players. They have a good system. They have a good relationship. The fans love him. We'll see what happens. But yeah, overwhelming? No. Underwhelming finish for the Carolina Hurricanes. Big disappointment to start the season. You were Stanley Cup favorites for a long time, and you come up short, losing in the second round to the New York Rangers. Ooh. Might be the favorites going forward now. They punched their ticket to the Final Four, Tim. Very fun. Should we move out west?
Let's do it.
Vancouver and Edmonton. Game 5. Huge game. Going back to Vancouver, Edmonton managed to win Game 4 to tie this series up, but still not a convincing win. Vancouver played very well that game. Edmonton squeaked it out. And the same thing kind of held fast this game. Edmonton came out strong, played really well in the first period, up 1-0. And then you could sense the Vancouver really, really, really started to play well. Before the game, huge changes to the Vancouver lineup. I remember, if you remember correctly, Rick Tocchet called out his whole team after Game 4. He said, we weren't good enough. None of the guys played hard. Maybe one or two guys really were skating, competing. Other than that, we were garbage. when asked between games, I think he was asked on Friday, you know, are you going to have some major changes in the lineup? What's going on? What is your thought process? This is what Rick Tocchet said. He said, the Lindholm line's been good most of the series. The Miller line's been good. I'm not sure breaking those guys up is the right thing to do. What do you guys are looking for? I'd say, no, we're not going to change anything up. He said that at the morning press conference, but saying that, yeah, we do need some more offense. We need to get some people going. I'm not sure about shuffling the lines right now is the right thing to do. You got to be careful when you start to mix and match. I don't think drastic changes are something to do. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Rick Tocchet is a dirty, rotten liar, Tim. After saying that in the morning skate, he goes ahead and just shuffles the whole lines. He gasses the whole fourth line. The whole fourth line. Lafferty, Makiev, and Carlson. Gone. Replaces them with DiGiuseppe, Amon, and Podkolzin. Like a completely new fourth line. He brings in Soucy, takes out Hoglander. That was obviously going to happen. He takes Lindholm off the Joshua Garland line, which has been very strong. He replaces Bluger on that line, which was a great line when we had Connor Garland on the show a few months ago. That was the best line in hockey. They got broken up because Joshua hurt his wrist. He goes back to the second line. Lindholm gets put in between Pettersson and Hoglander. Pettersson had been a centerman for a while now. He gets put on the wing with Hoglander and Lindholm in the middle. So he just went just completely changing up the whole lines. The only line that stayed the same was Miller, Besser, and Suter. So Tocchet's a disgusting liar in my eyes. let's stay with this. How ballsy is it for a coach in the second round, game five, when the series is tied 2-2, to eliminate a whole line, Tim? That's crazy. What message does that say to the team?
Yeah, you're on the clock. It's not good enough. And it is very ballsy to not only eliminate that whole line, but jumble most of the others, because it takes a few games most of the time. Even if you practice together and you play together the whole season, it takes time to find a rhythm, to get the timing down with each other, to find each other on the ice. And sometimes they don't connect. What if you put that line together and they don't have any chemistry? You know, like there's no margin for error in the playoffs. It's 2-2 heading back home. Like, you need to win that game. And it paid off, obviously, but it was a very risky move for him. And I think right now, because they won, he looks like a genius. If they lost, he'd be having a lot of criticism today.
Yeah, and he's a genius. And when you look at Rick Tocchet, how he carries himself, he doesn't mix words. And you could tell after game four, he was upset. He challenged his team. He called out a lot of people. And most people were thinking he was talking directly to Pettersson. JT Miller, after the game, I'm sure everybody's heard about it, he personally texted Rick Tocchet saying, I sucked. I wasn't good. I have to be better. My bad. I'll be better in game five. And I saw this interesting stat. Sportsnet came up with it. The Canucks set a record in the NHL going back to the year 1850, whatever the first year was. I don't know. They had the fewest shots on goal through the first 10 games of the postseason. That's incredible. For a team that has the amount of talent that they have, the game that they play, the pressure game, when you have Quinn Hughes, when you got Besser and Miller and Pettersson and Lindholm and all these guys, Tim, the least amount of shots in the first 10 games. We're talking like teams that got into the playoffs based on their defense, that just play the trap, the 1-3-1. That's not what the Canucks do. So that was a point of emphasis, and they went out and they fired everything. Everything at Picard. 35 shots hit the net. I think they fired over 60 shots at the guy. They dominated this game. They wanted to emphasize puck possession and pucks on the net, and that's exactly what they did. And I've seen a lot of people say this, and I'm not the only one who thinks it. That was the best game they played this playoffs. From the second period on, dominant, dominant hockey. Connor McDavid was not there. Everybody was invisible for the Edmonton Oilers. They dominated the puck possession, offensive zone time, everything. There was nothing the Oilers could do, and yet they still had a chance to win.
Yeah, what I like about this game too is, you know, you talk about like the offensive and the jumbling the lines and everything. You get the key goals from like unlikely heroes. Carson Soucy, who was came back from suspension, mm-hmm. puts in a goal. DiGiuseppe was one of the guys that was he a scratch before this game?
Healthy scratch, yeah.
Yeah, and so he comes into the game, and his kid was just born. I think his first kid. just like Brandon Carlo last week, scores a goal right after in his first game back, which is pretty special. And that was a great goal. Pretty ugly goal if you're Edmonton, the DiGiuseppe goal. And then you think it's heading to overtime, and then anything can happen to overtime. And then just incredibly lucky bounce if you're Vancouver. JT Miller swats it right in, 32 seconds left in the game, puts it away. Luckily, it's at home, so the crowd's going nuts. And you can just see, like, it just sucked the air out of the Oilers. They were in shock. They were getting ready for overtime, and then this game's over.
And you know whose fault it was? Who? Oh, captain, my captain, Connor McDavid.
So coming into some enemies out there in Edmonton.
The truth is actually hard to take sometimes if it's not nice to hear, but coming into the zone, it's a 2-on-2. Should be a simple play. The puck gets thrown on net, goes off of Pettersson's skate. Where the heck is Connor McDavid? He's right there, but he's just looking at Pettersson. His man, who he should have marked, is on the back door with a wide open net. And it's JT Miller, who is just money and showtime. He scores. The place goes nuts. And Connor McDavid, much like we talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, their missed chances, how they're going to be thinking about stuff, Dmitry Orlov, McDavid, I hope, is having a restless night. I hope he's thinking about that moment. You're the best player on the ice. You have to be aware of your surroundings. You can't take a second off. There's 30 seconds left. You have to be aware. You did it to the Canucks last game, where you stole a game in the last minute. You know, fair. It's all fair, right? It equals out. Jerry Seinfeld. You know, I lose $20, I get $20. So I guess the Canucks were due. But McDavid, Tim, not good enough. Dash 2, another game with no points. I don't want to say he's becoming irrelevant, but is he not the focal point for the Oilers offense anymore? Because when you watch the game, it's Leon Draisaitl who's driving the offense.
I take issue with the word anymore, as if this is some turning point for the Oilers and he's not going to come back to where he is. He's not playing well enough right now. That's certainly clear in this series. And I think it is a lot of credit to Vancouver. But like we said, he's going to come back and have, hopefully, tomorrow night, a 3-4 point night or whatever. And because he still is second in all the playoffs in points with 18. You know, like, he's still producing. It's just not his best. That we hold him such a higher standard. When he doesn't reach it, it feels like something's off or broken or he's hurt or something. But what an issue is he's becoming either an on or off player, right? It's a McDavid night or it's not. It's hard to find, like, oh, he had 1 point, 2 points. He's either got 3-4 and he dominates, or he's invisible. And that's not a good look right now. And I'm not saying that's who he is in general, but that's who he's looking like so far in this postseason.
And I tell you what, the games when he's off, it's a loss.
Yeah.
I think they've had one game where the secondary, you know, staff players have stepped up and got them a win. Other than that, if he doesn't get 3 or 4 points, they lose. And that's very concerning. And this has been like this for years for the Oilers. That's why they've been struggling to find depth. It's a huge issue every offseason. We need to take the weight off McDavid and Draisaitl. We got to get them some help. They bring in Hyman, that helps. But even this year, Kane sucks. You bring in Corey Perry, he's not doing too much. Holloway, sometimes he's good. Janmark, those guys, sometimes they'll pitch in a goal like they did last game. But you need McDavid to put up 3-4 points a game in order to win. That is the norm for the Edmonton Oilers. And if he can't do that, you're in trouble. You won't win. You don't have it on the back end. You don't have it in the third and fourth line to score goals consistently every single game. And if your power play isn't clicking, well, then you're in big trouble. Then you have no chance. And last night, Picard played great. He played really, really well. And they almost won the game. Just not good enough. McDavid needs to do something. I don't think he will. I'm a glasses half empty type guy. I think the Canucks have his number. I think he's played too much hockey. They've been wearing him down. He plays almost 24 minutes a game, and for a forward, whew, that's a lot. There's a difference between a D-man playing 25, 26 minutes and a forward playing 23, 24. Forwards are up and down the ice. They're all over the place. They're skating their bag off every single shift. The D-man can just exist. You know, you don't jump up in the rush. You kind of just follow the play. You don't skate too hard. You're really on it in the D-zone, but in the offensive zone, you're just taking it easy. A forward, especially a centerman, oof, you're going all the time. So McDavid, his 24 minutes, that's hard minutes. And then you're the focal point of the other team. You're getting whacked. You're getting slashed. You're getting cross-checked in the face. You're getting held and clutched. You can tell it's wearing on him. It wouldn't surprise me at the end of the season once they're out. He's got some injuries. He's got a broken this, a pulled that, because he doesn't look the same like we saw in the regular season. Or maybe he's just losing his steam. Sucks.
Well, and again, I said it before. I just don't want to discredit or discount what Vancouver's done. To shut him down. I mean, JT Miller is in his face. And I think the defense that I know you were worried about them being a little bit too big and too slow. The Susie, Zadorov, Ian Cole, Tyler Myers, they played great. They played really well when you needed them to. And so, like I said, I think this one still goes seven. I think we probably see more from McDavid. But now I'm thinking Vancouver wins this in seven. Yeah, where we'll before I was still thinking Edmonton would take the series.
Yeah, it's a great series. I love how JT Miller takes a faceoff. He just slapshot regatta. Like, he doesn't try to pull it back. He doesn't. He just, like, you can tell he wants. Like, I'm like, your stick should be on the ice, JT. And he just, like, boom, like, rips it. Like, and he wins half of them. So good for him. All right, moving on to the other series out west. Colorado. They extended their series versus Dallas the other night to make it 3-2. Everybody thought they were going to lose. Valnis Yuskin not playing. Devin Taves came back. Who came to the rescue? The two big M's, Tim. Talk about them.
Yeah, is what you needed from them. Nathan McKinnon had a goal and an assist, a beautiful goal. Makar had two goals, just like he did in game one. And your best players were your best players. You win this game. It's really hard. You know, we thought they were going to be eliminated. They just didn't seem to have it in games three and four, or two and three. So it's just, anyway, it's just that it's good to see them back on top. The Avs scored two on the power play, which is huge for them too. One of the things that's hurt Dallas in the past. I like Dallas to win this still, but it seems like Colorado's got a little bit of momentum. When McCarr and McKinnon are playing like that, it's hard to think this won't go 7-2. Now they have a chance to tie the series at home tonight.
Yeah, I don't know. Those two, you can't bet against them. We've said it time and time again. I think McKinnon is the MVP of the league. I think he's the best player in the league. He does everything great, and he does it at, you know, a high level of speed. And McCarr, for whatever reason, whenever he shoots, I think it's a soft shot. And it just somehow goes in. I haven't bought into him being an elite defenseman. And that's just me being dumb. Because he's been doing it for years now. But doesn't it look like... I know he is. But doesn't it look like when he shoots it, he's just like, meh. But then it just rips by the goalie. I don't know what it is about his release.
He went bar down on one of them.
Oh, I know. And they were incredible shots. But like Quinn Hughes' shot last night when it went off the crossbar, that looked like just a laser. McCarr, whenever he shoots it, it's just almost like an afterthought, like do 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 do, boom, and then it's in. Like, how do you do that? It's very impressive. I'm not trying to, you know, speak down of him or speak ill. I just don't. My brain can't translate how he does these things that he does. It's just very fun to watch.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some magic to it where he's what's the word? Deceptive with his shot.
Yeah.
Like a lot of guys do. Crosby is famous for that. I read an article many years ago on Players Tribune. I think it was Lundqvist, Luongo, one of those guys. He said like Crosby's just so deceptive because he doesn't have a hard shot, but he makes you think he's going to do something else. And then it's just this little floater right under your shoulder or over the elbow, whatever. And I wonder if there's a little bit of that with Makar's shot too, because he's got that hockey IQ. And to do it at that whatever speed that, you know, he's on another plane when it comes to that. So I wonder if there's some of that in play too.
Yeah, even I noticed McDavid had one in the first period of power play. He just fluttered it towards the net and it hit the post. But I'm just like, that shot must have been going 50 miles an hour. And it just manages to hit the post. But anyways, anything else in this series? So you think Colorado's going to win tonight and send it back to Dallas for game seven?
I think they do. I still like Dallas, but I think this one's going 7-2. I hope they all go seven.
Don't think Carolina Rangers will, but I think Dallas. See, there's only so much you can rely on those two guys and so much they can do, but I can't bet against them. They're so incredibly good, but I think Dallas does close this one out. I'm going to go opposite of you. I think Dallas wins tonight. All right, another series that could potentially be over tonight. Your Boston Bruins fought back and won Game 5 to make it 3-2 without Brad Marchand. Very resilient effort. They go to Boston. Jeremy Swayman was correct. We're sending it back to Boston. What are your thoughts on, first of all, will Marchand play?
He skated. Montgomery said this morning he's going to be a game time decision. I think he's going to play. I just don't think he's going to, if it's in his control, he's going to play. The only thing that would stop him is if, you know, the team doctor says, you know, concussion can't play. So I think if it's his decision, he's going to play. And I also love what he said, because he spoke to the press for the first time since this yesterday or the day before. And he was asked about the hit on Bennett, or Bennett's hit on him. And there's a couple of things. I want to read two quotes. Well, the first one will break down. I think he got away with a shot, he said, but I'm not going to complain. Crap happens. I bet on the other side of a lot of plays. That's part of the game, part of playoff hockey. Sucks to be on the other side of it, but that stuff happens. Saying, listen, it was a cheap shot. I've thrown plenty of cheap shots. This one went against me. What can I say? It's accountability and ownership. And like, yeah, he's a rat, but he knows it. And when he's another guy rats him, he's not going to say that, he's not going to play the victim card, which I really liked.
The honesty, because most people wouldn't say that. They would just shy away from it. In his next comment, he's even more honest. This is very rare that people go out and actually tell it like it is, because everybody wants to say like, oh, you know, everybody respects everybody else and this and that. No, it's a dangerous sport, you know, and stuff happens. So I'm glad he's acknowledging that. I had it coming, guy. You know, I've done this a lot of times to a lot of people, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah, so here's the next one. People don't want to say it, but part of playoffs is trying to hurt every player on the other team. The more guys you take out, the more advantages your team has. Every time you step on the ice, someone is trying to hurt someone.
I love that.
John, I'm not just saying this, but I saw this quote and I immediately thought of you. And I don't do that all the time, but I was like, wow, John is going to love this. And I feel like it's the kind of honesty that, again, not bumping your tires, but you've said stuff like this in the past and you've taken critique for it. But
yeah,
because it's one of those things you don't say out loud, you know, like the meme, like always said the quiet part out loud. Marshawn, everyone loves this from him. What was your take on it?
Well, he's honest. And I think you nailed it. I do love this. That's what everybody try. Well, I'll preface this. I don't want to come off as like an old fogey here. I don't think this is the norm anymore. I think young kids don't think like this. Brad Marchand is a vet. He's been around the league for 15 plus years. I think this is going away. I don't think players want to hurt anybody anymore. And they are more aware of the other guys and they try to take care of that. That's not how it used to be. So things are changing a little bit, but there's still a large group of people who this is what happens. When you get on the ice, you're my enemy. I want to kill you. I want to hurt you. I don't want you to succeed. I want to win this game and this series. And I think it's great. That's what people love about hockey. It's the hatred. It's the passion. It's the, you can tell that these guys don't like each other and they're going to go to battle. And anytime they get a chance to hurt somebody or do something within the lines, maybe, you know, step outside the lines a little bit, they're going to do it. And it's fantastic to hear it because it's honest and people respond to that and they flock to it. They're like, yeah, I like that. I don't like it when players talk after the game. I don't like it when players talk during the game, before the game. Hey, buddy, what's up? What are you doing later? How's your summer? How's the family? Cut that crap out. You're here to do the job, man. You're here to hurt somebody. You're here to win. That's why I love this. I absolutely love it. So good for Brad Marchand.
Yeah, I thought it was great too. And I don't know, like, it. How much of it do you feel like is intentional versus like trying to hurt someone? Am I going after you because I'm trying to hurt you, or am I being reckless? And if you get hurt as part of it, then fine. But I'm trying to do whatever, make the play, win the game, versus like, I'm doing whatever I can to knock this guy out of the series so I can move on. Like, how, you know what I mean? Like the difference between those? Yeah.
Well, I think we saw there's the good way to go about it and there's a bad way to go about it. Nazem Kadri went about it the bad way for many, many years where he hated the Bruins.
Yeah.
Hated them, wanted to hurt them, did hurt them. But he stepped outside the lines and he got suspended. And it happened, 3 years in a row where he did something that was really, really nasty. Guy like Brad Marchand. Marchand plays within the lines a little bit. You know, he steps out a little bit. He doesn't get suspended, but he is a pest and he hurts people. And he does it kind of the sly way, the sneaky way. Jacob Trouba wants to kill you. We saw it versus the Carolina. He tried to decapitate Nikas. He wanted to hurt him. Don't get it twisted. That's what he was trying to do within, you know, the lines, within the rules of play. I like that. I like that a lot. Nikita Zadorov. You can tell he doesn't like the Edmonton Oilers. Darnell Nurse, can you tell he doesn't like the Vancouver Canucks? Not really. Who would you rather have? A guy who hates who he's playing, or a guy who's just lukewarm? He's like, oh, you know, there's good guys over there, you know? I skate with him in the summer. Good dudes. You can tell Zadorov doesn't skate with any of these guys.
Yeah.
He goes back to Russia, and then he comes back, and he just talks smack, and he tries to get in your grill, and he tries to be a pest, and he tries to hurt you. I think there's too much community in the summers where players just come together, and they train, and they hang out, and they get to know each other. So if you have someone lined up, maybe you don't finish them. I think we need to go back to get rid of the phones, the texting, the groups, this and that. No more international play. It ruins everything. I like this passion. I like it a lot. So good for Brad Marchand. I hope he plays game six. I've changed my tune. Go out and hurt somebody.
Game six tonight in Boston Garden. I think this one goes seven. I changed my tune on this one again, too. I like the Bruins to win tonight. It's going to be another Swayman night, another night where he saves your bacon, probably more than you deserve. But I think they'll frustrate Florida a little bit and win like 3-2, 2-1, something like that.
I don't know what's going to happen. I want the Bruins to win, but who knows? And this goes for the last series too, Dallas, Colorado. I have no clue. We're not good at guessing. In the playoffs, anything goes. These are all very good teams. There's no bad team left in the playoffs. I could see any, maybe not the Bruins. I could see any team except the Bruins win the Stanley Cup, right? Do you think there's another? Could you see Florida? Could you see the Rangers? Could you see any team out west win the Stanley Cup? I could.
Yeah, I don't like that, but yeah, maybe.
They're the odd one out, right? They're the one who doesn't have the total package. They don't have the D, the scoring, the goaltender, everything going for them. I think every other team won't.
Yeah,
strength on the middle. It's just there's a lot of holes there that need to be filled, and they're getting buttressed up by Jeremy Swayman. So moving on, I had a thought yesterday. I shouted out to Tim. We're running out of time here. We only got 10 minutes, but I said, who are the Conn Smythe favorites for each team? Because it's a little too early to pick, but you can start to tell clear cut favorites. Who is this team's best player as it moves forward? Who's going to be the Conn Smythe? So right now, after the round two. For only the teams that are still alive. So the Carolina Hurricanes are out. They don't count for this. I want to know, who is your Conn Smythe favorite? And then on the opposite side of the page, I also want to talk about who's the biggest disappointment from every team. Which player, if you look back, that's my least valuable player. I like to do this. I think it's fun. The best and the worst. So let's start with your Boston Bruins. I think it's resounding to who their best player is.
Yeah, I mean, Swayman. I don't even know who would be second place. You know, it's incredible what he's done. So he's the obvious pick there.
I agree. All right, moving on. The team they're playing, Florida Panthers. Who do you got for their Conn Smythe right now?
This one is tough for both the best and worst player. I'm going to go with Barkov. You know, he's tied with Tkachuk with the team leading points, but he's also just doing these things as he always does without the puck. Just away from the play with the breaking at the pass, the stick, the turnovers, the takeaways, all that. So he's my clear MVP among this group.
Yeah, we talk about Kreider goals like within 1 foot. Barkov, all his goals seem to just be like coast to coast. Like just get the puck in the neutral zone, out-muscle three guys, get in the zone and fire it home. He's been incredible. My guy is a little bit, maybe nobody really notices him, as Gustav Forsling. Plays in the top D-line unit, gets a ton of minutes, getting some decent amount of points, but just been really, really solid. Allows Ekblad or Montour, whoever he's playing with, to be a little more aggressive. This guy is just a steady-as-she-goes defenseman, does everything right, big-time security blanket for whoever he's playing with, and he's a fifth-round draft pick. He's been playing lights out. I like myself some Gustav Forsling. A close second for me is a third- or fourth-line guy, Evan Rodriguez. Every game I watch for the Panthers, he stands out, doesn't he? He's a water bug around the ice. He's always in it. Getting a lot of grade A chances, scoring some big goals at times. But yeah, he's been good.
He's a great player. And I don't understand like guys like him and Sonny Milano and even like Eric Gustafson always sign like league minimum or they have to do a PTO. I don't understand why they're not like just full-time NHLers because you watch them and they're great. And they create offense, they create opportunities. So yeah, I think he's a good little player.
I went and checked how the Hurricanes got a Gustav Forsling. Sorry, not the Hurricanes, the Panthers, how they get a Gustav Forsling. And it's like they just rob people of trades all the time. And it's just sad that the Blackhawks had him at one point and they just give him away for Calvin DeHaan. It's like, oh, what are we doing here, everybody? It just boggles my mind. Anyways, I don't want to dump on the Blackhawks, but it's just so funny to look back at trades and go, oof, Missed that one. All right. Colorado Avalanche, Tim. Who do you got for your MVP so far?
Yeah, it's between Makar and MacKinnon, and yeah. I'll go with Makar. Just goal-scoring defenseman, you know, just huge, usually good for them. I think he won when they won a couple of years ago, but yeah, if they were going right now and do it again, I feel like he's the pick.
He's a difference maker. I agree. It's hard to go against him, even though MacKinnon is playing really, really well. Makar, it's just, he's one of a kind. All right, Dallas Stars.
Yeah, for all the attention that Wyatt Johnston's gotten, I would have thought he led the team in points. He doesn't. He's third behind Robertson and Heiskanen. And so I know Johnston's the sexy pick, but I think I'm going to pick Heiskanen. He leads the team in points as a defenseman. He's playing the top 4 minutes. He's playing shutdown role. I know it's not as sexy as the Wyatt Johnston, what this kid has done, but I think if you look at the most important player on that roster, it's Heiskanen.
Yeah. He's pretty good, Heiskanen. I like sexy stuff. So I think this series in particular versus the Colorado Avalanche, Wyatt Johnston has been a very, very good player. He was okay versus the Vegas Golden Knights. Don't get me wrong. Very good. He's been very good versus the Avalanche. So I'm taking Wyatt Johnston. I think he's been good. All right, the New York Rangers. Who do you got, Tim?
Yeah, again, not a clear pick in my eyes. There's a few guys doing great things on the offensively, but I'm picking Shesterkin. Just his stats are great. He's been just giving him a chance to win every single night, so he's my pick.
I went back and forth on this one. Adam Fox has been struggling, so he's not even in the mix anymore. But on a team that you have like Trocheck and Panarin and Zibanejad and Shesterkin and all these great players, it's Chris Kreider for me. He's the guy who's been scoring the big goals. He's been there the longest, and I feel like he doesn't get the accolades he's deserving. So I'm going to give him the Conn Smythe. I'm giving it to him right now. And he's the one who's like, we're going to go and we're going to win. You know what I mean? He sets the tone. He makes those projections, and I think he's been great for this team. I don't think Shesterkin's been terrible. I don't think he's been out of this world. So Chris Kreider, he's my guy. All right, the Oilers. Can we just give it to Leon?
That's right. That's my pick.
Me too. All right, the Canucks. Who do we got for them?
Another tough one. There's a lot of guys in that conversation, but I'm going to go with JT Miller just because he's so good offensively, but he plays such a complete game. I think Brock Besser deserves a lot of credit for the goals that he scored, and obviously Shelovs is excellent and just saved their bacon when it looked like they were in desperation mode, but I'm going to go with JT.
Yeah, he's hard to miss. He's only got 3 goals, though. That's the only thing. He's getting big goals last night, 30 seconds left, gets a goal. Besser's had a couple big games where he scored some goals. Quinn Hughes has not scored yet. Shockingly, he's got 9 assists, no goals. My guy, Elias Lindholm, has been playing really well. My guy just does it all over the ice. Nikita Zadorov. When times are tough, when they needed the guy, when they needed someone to stand up and say something or do something, it's him. He's putting out points for big dude. He's got 4 goals, 4 assists, and he's just a force back there, Tim. He really does. He does make a difference, even if he's not putting points on the score sheet. So he's my guy, Conn Smythe, Nikita Zorov. As crazy as that might sound, I think he has the biggest impact on the game for the Vancouver Canucks. All right, we've done the good. Let's go to the bad. Boston Bruins, a lot to choose from the Bruins.
Yeah, a few guys came to mind. I think Charlie Coyle has not been great. He's got 1 goal, 4 assists. He needs to be better. But I'm going to go with Pavel Zacha. He started as your number one center, playing with Pastrnak. He was pretty good in the regular season, something like around 60 points plus or minus. He played great, and he's just been close to invisible. He has 0 goals, 5 assists. Like, he had a couple opportunities the other night, and just you have no faith in him burying the puck or making the play. And it's kind of what Hampus Lindholm did last year. So good in the regular season, then it's just like he's a completely different player in the playoffs. So really frustrating for Boston, where you thought you had your top six lined up and ready for a run, and then they kind of put up basically squat. So he's my pick there.
Yeah, mine's going to be a little bit of a strange pick because he's leading the team in points, but it's Brad Marchand. He's got 10 points, 3 goals, 7 assists. When you look at the deeper stats in the last 5-6 games, he got all of his points in the first 4 games versus the Leafs. He had 8 points in 4 games. The last 6 games, he's got 2 assists. He needs to be better. There's no way around it. I know we got hurt in one of the games, but he still played half the game. So it's Brad Marchand. He's been a huge disappointment, especially with the lack of scoring for the Bruins already. You rely on him and Pasta so heavily. Yeah. And if he's not going, oof, it's tough. And you can tell ever since the Leafs, they've been struggling to score goals. So he needs to pick it up if they have any chance. He needs to play first. And then he's got to score some goals. So he's my biggest disappointment. All right, the Panthers. Like you said, hard to pick someone from the Panthers. Who did you pick, Tim?
Yeah, it took me a minute. This was actually probably my most difficult one when I was looking at their roster and looking up and down at their stats. And then one name finally jumped out at me. It's Vladimir Tarasenko. He was their deadline pickup. You thought he was going to kind of solidify their top six or maybe add some depth to their third line and just be another lights out, reliable playoff performer. And he's just not been that at all. 5 points. You thought you were getting more when you added him to your lineup at the deadline. So he's my pick.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to poke holes in this lineup. Everybody's been playing so well. Maybe like Reinhardt could do a little more. That line isn't, I don't know. I picked Tarasenko as well because Bob's been doing playoff Bob stuff. He's been playing great. The defense has been playing strong. OEL has some lapses at times, but that's who he is. You don't expect him to be a defensive juggernaut. That's what you get from Oliver Ekman-Larsson. So it's Tarasenko, but it's just with an asterisk saying he's still playing really good. The Panthers are just a solid team. All right, the Colorado Avalanche. There's a lot. Lots to choose from there, too.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Walker was a name that came up because he was a deadline addition. You thought you were going to, I mean, he's not a points guy, but you thought you were going to get like a kind of do-everything defenseman that you can lean on. And he's been that at time, but he's got 0 points in the playoffs so far.
That's tough.
And he's a -4. So, like, that's kind of what not what you were expecting from him. But the obvious pick for me is Georgiev. Just, you can tell the team doesn't have a ton of faith in him, and it affects the way they play. His 309 goals against, 890 save percentage. You just needed more from him. And he's kept them in it in some games, and I think they relied on their offense and their defense, but he needs to be better if they're going to win this round and do anything else.
Yeah, there's a lot to pick from. I'm going to go with your leading goal scorer, Val Nichushkin. You got to be better. You can't be doing what you're doing, failing drug tests and costing your team potentially a Stanley Cup. So he is my biggest disappointment. He won't be around. He won't be around next year. They might, if they can, get away from his contract. So, it is what it is. All right, the Dallas Stars. This is not fun for us to say, everybody.
No. And this guy did score a great, very Pavs-like goal the other night with that weird little tip in front of the net. But Joe Pavelski, only one goal so far and only 3 points total. It's kind of been hidden because you're getting so much production from other younger players in the lineup, but it feels like age and time has finally caught up with them.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the Rangers, we both have the same person, Adam Fox.
Yeah.
4 assists through this playoffs for the amount of goals the Rangers have been scoring. It hasn't affected this team because their first line has been outstanding. Their power play has been lights out. They've been able to make up for him. But as they move forward, Eastern Conference Finals, maybe the Stanley Cup, you need this guy to pick it up. You need him to start putting points on the board, being a difference maker. So he's just an uncharacteristic 4 assists, 0 points so far. He needs to be better. And not playing that great defensively. The first goal last game, Martinook and him behind the net, he just gets out-muscled. Martinook throws it out front, 1-0. So Oilers, there's a couple bad ones. You think who? Skinner, Tim, Nurse? Who do you got?
Yeah, I mean, both of them. Skinner obviously has lost the job. He was just dreadful. So I think he's the obvious pick. But I would also throw Darnell Nurse in there. Only has 2 points. And again, you're getting that from Bouchard now. You don't need a ton from him offensively, but you'd hope for a little bit more than that. And he's -9. So Edmonton is just, they've been struggling, and he's good. A big part of that in the back end. So
yeah, the biggest part of them struggling, and this is the guy who is the biggest disappointment. You have to match expectations with output. So his expectations are sky high. Highest expectations you can have right now on planet Earth for a hockey player. And his output doesn't match the expectations. Connor McDavid, 0 points last game. -2. Not good enough.
He's still second in points in the whole league.
I know. But you want him to be first. You want him to be first by a country mile. That's what he does. That's who he is. That's who we expect him to be. He's been a disappointment. Massive disappointment. 0 points in a playoff game for Connor McDavid. This guy's Superman. Superman, Tim. He's playing like Robin from Batman and Robin. Does Superman have a sidekick? He's playing like Lois Lane. Okay. He's got to be Superman. All right. The Canucks. Who do you got?
Yeah, I'll say Mikiev was one of those scratches. 0 points so far. And then Ronick, who was playing for a contract, had an excellent regular season. You think he wants to continue that because he's looking for a number one job in the offseason when he's a free agent. And so far, he has 0 points in the playoffs, which is not what you want to see if you're a contender looking to grab that guy from the free agency market. So I'd say those are the two most disappointing for me.
I'm going to go with their supposed best player, Elias Pettersson. It's not good when your best player is being called out by your coach after game 4 in the second round. So he did respond. He got on the, you know, score sheet. He scored a goal. Good for him. But he's only got 5 points this playoffs. One goal, four assists, dash one. When they last made the playoffs in 1920, he was a point per game guy. 18 points, 17 games, kind of his breakout playoff series. Everybody thought, ooh, this is the guy. Sign him to a big contract. This is it. We're going to roll with him. Not so good. We need him to be better. Thank goodness for Miller, the Garland line, Lindholm. They've been carrying the weight. Imagine if he gets going, how dangerous Vancouver could be. But he's been very pedestrian, Tim. Very, very pedestrian for a guy who's supposed to be the guy. He's your guy.
Yeah, agreed.
Not good enough from Pettersson and McDavid. They got to both pick it up. Or they could be waived, you know, this offseason. You never know. Buy him out. All right, quick hits, Tim. What are we doing?
Just one quick hit today. The LA Kings locked up one of their pending UFAs and signing David Rittich, the goaltender, 1 year, $1 million contract extension. So this is clearly a backup goaltender move, but it begs the question, what do they need from their other goalie on the roster? Do they re-sign Cam Talbot? Do they explore trade options? Do they find a way to do both? I think, you know, I was thinking about after Carolina got eliminated last night, they're one of the more interesting teams to watch this summer just because of their roster. I think Toronto's on that list, Boston's on that list, Arizona's on that list, or Utah, whatever. I think LA's also on that list. They've got a lot of interesting decisions to make, and one of them will be who's their goaltender is.
It is. Phoenix Copley had a good season, but he's 32. He's on the IR right now. You got Cam Talbot, who's 36, and David Rittich is 31. Not the ideal ages for your goaltenders when you want to be a competitor, when you have young forwards on the team. What happens? I don't know. There's good goalies don't grow on trees, so they'll have to figure something out. Rob Blake has his work cut out for him, but he obviously likes David Rittich. Worth enough to sign him to $1 million for next year. So he'll be a good backup. LA Kings, who knows what's going to happen. All right, everybody, that's enough for me. That's enough for us. Thanks for joining us this week. We hope you have a nice weekend. It's supposed to be glorious. Get out there, have some fun, enjoy the weather. We'll talk to you guys on Monday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.